Talking Records Podcast, Talking Records Podcast, Talking Records Podcast. We talk about our favorite records, Talking Records Podcast. We're so glad you tuned in. Thank you all for listening. You showed up to the right place. Jed and his friends dive deep and analyze the records we have grown to love. We'll tell you how we found the band, then give you a track-by-track breakdown of all the songs. So grab your favorite beverage and pull up a seat. Today we'll look at another record in its entirety.
Hello, what's up, everyone? My name is Jed, and this is Talking Records, a podcast about the records that we love. The goal here is to round up everything we can about these albums and provide you, the listener, with everything that's out there, all in one place. I got pretty tired of scrounging the internet and magazines for information about these amazing albums. I wanted it all in one place, so that's what I'm trying to do here. Today, I am joined by my good friend Scott. Scott, how's it going?
It's going great, Jet. Thanks for having me back to the podcast.
It's good to have you back. Last time we talked to Millencolin, before that a little propaganda.
Yeah, I mean, couldn't be more different in the punk world there, but two great bands, two great albums, and we're back with another propaganda one today.
Yes, let's talk more rock. This is going to be a lot of fun, man. There's so much to talk about on this episode. Scott, I am actually sitting in a beanbag chair, and I got to be honest, I don't think I can podcast any other way from now on.
I'm jealous. Like this, as you can see, there's a sofa behind me. Sitting there thinking, man, why didn't I just kind of pull the laptop over there and set up? But I got a rickety old chair here, so you're going to hear me rolling around, and it'll be fun.
Let's Talk More Rock was released on April 23rd, 1996 through Fat Records. The album was recorded the previous winter at Razor's Edge and was produced by Ryan Green. During the mixing stage of the band's debut, How to Clean Everything, Fat Mike approached the band to sign a deal memo. A deal memo is a term used to describe a document which summarizes the key points of a contract between two or more parties. Deal memos are the precursor to a full contract, which ultimately documents the legal agreement between the parties for a second album. The band wasn't very satisfied with their debut and didn't even have notions of recording a second album. 2 years later, they were urged back into the studio. So I thought that's kind of interesting about the contract. You know, Fat really doesn't have contracts, but, you know, it's like so low-key. And
yeah, I always scratch my head on the fact that they were just so disappointed with the first album that it was like...
They hate it.
Why would we, you know, we can't possibly come up with anything, you know?
Yeah.
Other than crap, apparently, but no, here we are. Let's Talk More Rock.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. The first album's awesome. I don't care what they say.
And it's a classic.
It is. It's a classic. And, you know, because they were so disgruntled with how it turned out and how it was received by people at shows and bro culture just abound every time, you know, they would play. It's, you know, this is their fuck you to everybody.
They've got a bitter taste in their mouth.
Yeah. And so this is sort of a fun dive into this one when you really start hashing into all these, into this 25 minutes of fury. So
yeah. Early recording sessions for their next album took place at Motor Studio in San Francisco. The studio was built in the house where Anne Rice wrote Interview with a Vampire. On Chris Hanna's podcast, he talks about driving down there thinking he could just write the lyrics once he got there. Once there, he realized how hard it would be. After recording all day, he would try to write at night. Chris recalled sitting in the control room at Motor after one of the engineers had told him the place was haunted. Even Ryan Green said he wouldn't work there alone at night. Chris laughed it off. Alone in the studio that night, trying to write, he freaked himself out and exhausted, eventually fell asleep on the couch.
Love it.
After listening to more bizarre stories about the studio and feeling under pressure to get the songs done, the band decided the time just wasn't right and headed home. So that's it.
So maybe they were possessed writing this. That's
bad vibes.
Yeah, bad vibes. I don't know.
According to bassist John Sampson in Exclaim, I remember driving down there and starting recording without having all the songs finished. And we had to just drive home. I recall driving home in 36 hours from San Francisco. And it was a blow, I think. I just remember being in San Francisco in the Metro Hotel, which was just down the street from the studio. And I think we got a room there so Chris would have some space to write. And I just remember just how hard that was on him trying to write that way. The failed recording session gave the band an early lesson in being ready when going into the studio. The band was also grappling with what the album would sound like. According to Chris on his podcast, the band did not want to make a record in line with all the, quote, commercially safe records that were coming out in the late 90s with hopes of catching onto punk's rising popularity. Have you listened to his podcast, Scott?
Yeah, I've listened to it, and I would say to his commentary there, mission accomplished.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the few times anybody can get away with saying that line confidently. So, yeah.
I just love his take on that 90s punk and, like, you know, like serving up the warm hamburgers under the under the glow lights. And
exactly.
His whole take on that is just, I love listening to him talk. And it's a great podcast. If you haven't checked out Chris Hanna's podcast, it is a Patreon. Definitely check it out. It's so good.
Yeah. And we'll talk about some of that. I found some interesting sort of humorous parallels to how he describes some of that. But what actually goes on in this album and some of the just the musical direction they choose.
Yeah.
That, you know, we'll get there, but I'm kind of thinking about that and like, wow, you know, there's some, you should kind of step back a little bit and think about just musically, take the lyrics out of this, just think about the music and how that's could be very commercial in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Due to the popularity of their first album, How to Clean Everything, and the sudden interest in punk rock at this time, the band noticed people in their crowds who weren't quite picking up on what the band was saying in their music. According to an article by Greg Prasat for Exclaim, vocalist-guitarist Chris Hanna said, "Let's draw a line in the sand. Let's make sure we're not misunderstood. We have these values. Let's make sure nobody misunderstands them. Even if it separates the wheat from the chaff, and we're the chaff, and it's just us, let's lay it out on the table." And of course, anyone who's ever picked up this album knows that everything is broadcast right on that cover. They are making sure everybody knows that they are animal-friendly, anti-fascist, gay-positive, pro-feminist. It's all there.
Crystal clear. You can't miss it. Just can't. Which is great, though. Like,
yeah.
Good for them. I love this album. I love everything they try to do here. You know, good for them. They had a vision based on what they perceived as a terrible experience the first time around making their first album, and they really went for the throat. So...
And first attempt. So for the second attempt, the band reconnected with Ryan Green, this time at Razor's Edge. George set up a Pearl drum kit he had purchased back home in Winnipeg. Chris plugged in his Ibanez guitar into a Mesa Boogie Mark IV, an 85-watt tube combo. John brought a SWR solid-state bass head. According to Chris in a Brooklyn Vegan article, "I didn't think we were doing anything that much different than the first record as we were making it. But I remember Fat Mike commenting on the vocals saying, 'You're trying to sing.' I didn't really understand at the time, but I guess I was just being gun-shy since I hated what happened on the first record so much. I was being encouraged to sneer and sing in this nasally way. On Less Talk, I was avoiding that, but I didn't know what to do, so I was just kind of talking in key." Chris admits on his own podcast that the vocals on this album do sound like they have less personality. When the album went to mastering, the sequencing was different. The album kicked off with Less Talk, More Rock, and other songs were switched around. At some point, the band concluded the song order was weak. To have the album remastered and resequenced, the band had to fork over another couple $1,000s. Can you imagine that? You get it all set, and you're like, no, we don't like it this way, and you have to fork over more money to fix it.
Yeah. Yeah, I can actually. It's, I get it. I get it. It's
been there.
It's, yeah, I've been there.
The band was also starting to grow apart musically. Chris commented on parting with John and Vice's Rank Your Records. He said, "It was the end of where we were going to go with John, but it was a good way to go out. It was sort of like Propagandhi meets the Weaker Thens. It worked for that one record, and I don't think it would have worked again, but I really like the way it turned out." Samson left Propagandhi during the Less Talk tour, and some hard feelings lingered for years after. According to Samson, his anxiety over the confrontational shows and his differing direction in songwriting led to the split. I know we talked about how you got into Propagandhi when we did the supporting cast record. Tell me about how you arrived at this record, Less Talk, More Rock.
This came out 96 as I was graduating high school. We got wind that there was this record shop down the beach that actually had a few copies of this album. So we went down with my buddy Zach, who was drummer of Redline, and Redline involved in the softer side and so forth and everything. But we went down there and they had two copies. So I got one, he got the other. And that was pretty much heavy rotation that entire summer of 96. And it's funny, you know, I'm kind of going to go down a little tangent here. It's just one of those things, like, since we started talking about doing this and revisiting this album the past few weeks, I kind of feel like, you know, 70% of this record, you know, wiping away all the lyrics, you'd actually have a pretty solid Green Day Dookie-ish or MXPX Life in General album. Mm-hmm. It's just really a good pop punk record. And most of the songs really are just really straight up punk punk. And I know the goal of this album was really kind of like a 180 degree turn from what they did and How to Clean Everything.
Right.
But, you know, the album is very lyrically focused on just, you know, pissing people off and also trying to get people to use their, you know, brains more. And I think, as I commented earlier, like they do this in 25 minutes and some change. So they, I mean, they cram a lot in here, but like, yeah. My big epiphany was, you know, listening to this in high school and thinking, man, this is such a killer, brutal skate punk album. And going back and kind of just trying to strip it all down and just realizing how poppy punk this whole album is. Mm. Now, I love this record. And, you know, it was really the big part of that soundtrack of my summer, the year I graduated. Mm-hmm. And I will say this album does contain, in my opinion, and I have a feeling most people from this era probably have this opinion as well, probably one of the most iconic songs of the mid-90s. Mm. And in the skate punk record, I think you know which one I'm probably leaning towards.
Yep.
And we'll dive into that later. But like every time I hear that too, it's just like it brings me right back to that summer of 96.
Mm-hmm. I had, you know, obviously picked up How to Clean Everything, but I got to be honest, I think I might have said this before, like it just didn't really grab me. I liked it, but I didn't love it. I just kind of, you know, was paying attention to other bands at the time. Years later, I was actually dating this gal, and she was heavily into the band and would play this record all the time. And I remember thinking at the time, like, oh, they got a different singer. And anyway, I used to, because I was a bonehead, I would tease her about being a vegetarian. And, you know, I would shrug and say stuff like, oh, come on, the world's not that bad. But she didn't give up on me. She didn't give up on me. You know, passed me some books and we had some discussions, and you know, I started listening to the lyrics more critically and thinking about, you know, what they were saying, and you know, I would look things up and try to understand what they were talking about, try to understand my surroundings a little bit better. And yeah, it was just a real eye opener for me. I mean, punk rock lyrics don't shape my worldview, but they certainly give me things to think about and consider. And I love hearing oftentimes my thoughts and opinions more poetically spoken by someone who's a better writer than I. Needless to say, I got really into this album and continued to, you know, pick up their albums over the years. And they're one of the most interesting punk bands to listen to because they've got great musicianship and the lyrics are great. And they're always moving forward. You know, this is the type of band that are constantly, like, every record is better than the next, you know. And so, yeah, I just really loved this album, listened to it a lot back then, still do. Love the sound of the bass.
Love it, yeah. But, you know, this was a band that was so different from so many of these other bands coming out at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing sounded like Propagandhi. Mm-hmm. And nobody was writing lyrics like Propagandhi. And I always found that fascinating. Grew up, spent a lot of my formative years in Northern Florida. So a lot of these themes, it was taboo. You didn't listen to this stuff. You didn't hear any of this stuff, but yet it was so popular in the circles that I was traveling in. And it was just mind blowing that, wow, like I got this, I'm blasting it in my car next to the guy in the pickup truck over there, who's probably got a gun rack. And if he's really paying attention to what I'm listening to, God knows what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But you want him
to hear it, and you're like, he'll hear this, and he'll come around.
Well, that was the thing. Like, it was one of those bands, like, that just didn't give a fuck, but they gave a fuck at the same time. That's why they made this album, really.
Right.
Because, you know, they had something to say. Apparently, they didn't get it across in the first album, and now was their opportunity under contract to get this out. And say what they have to say and get people to stop, think, and listen. And I'm going to say that quite a bit throughout this thing. You know, I think this was the springboard for a lot of how they thought about at least making records going forward.
They also have a great sense of humor, but I read a great quote or heard a great quote on, maybe it was on Chris's podcast, where he's like, you know, at this time we just weren't feeling goofy, you know, and that's why they really made this serious record. And, you know, going forward, like you were just saying, they did kind of, it was a better mix of, you know, the serious stuff with a little bit of humor thrown in.
No, absolutely. I mean, there's always some tongue in cheek with them, even if they're being really serious. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you can dig through the weeds in some of these songs and find it.
Yeah.
You know, this one had a purpose to be less tongue in cheek for sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think they definitely picked it up here and there, you know, on the later albums.
All right. We got a lot to talk about, Scott. So let's dive into these tracks. The record starts off with, apparently I'm a PC fascist because I care about both human and non-human animals.
My schedule's in their flags, they funnel refugee. Character assassination. Ignore the issues and other relations between consumption and brutality.
Right from the start, you notice that nice clangy bass sound.
Yep.
I just love it.
It's poppy, it's bouncy, and it's mainly courtesy of John's bass line, which, you know, Chris just rips along with, but like that bass just sets the tone for the whole song.
Yeah, I love it. I can't get enough of it. Everybody knows, anyone who's listened to this podcast knows I love a clangy bass.
Yep. But that was like the sound. I feel like that was such a big part of like Ryan Green's mixing.
Oh, totally. And, yeah.
I mean, any band he touched always had that. It's like this twangy.
Yeah, pingy bass, sound.
You know? Yeah.
In this song, Chris seems to be calling out these so-called activists who rally for a cause but then make light of other causes. For example, those who still consume animal products while spouting other liberal ideas. Sometimes these people often mock vegetarians and make jokes at their expense. He sings, "So you can go ahead and roll your eyes and marginalize me, socially penalize me, play on my insecurities." I think every vegan or vegetarian has had to have that ridiculous conversation with someone about why they're a vegetarian and where they're getting their protein. You know, it's like, oh, God.
And to their credit on this, I think that they use that theme as sort of setting the tone for what you're going to hear throughout the album.
Yes.
I mean, it's a strong portrait of this poser lifestyle that they're kind of rallying against and pointing at here. You know, but from the viewpoint of, hey, you know, we back our views up by living it versus you so-called hypocrites. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can pretend to have your liberal viewpoint and are really too chicken shit to live, you know, that lifestyle and, you know, espouse those values.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but, you know, per Chris, you know, love the line. I'll call you on your shit. Please call me on mine. His way of saying, you know, come back at me. You know, I'm ready to go. So,
yeah, I'm not perfect. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
He's acknowledging the importance of being open and thoughtful.
Yeah. At the same time saying, like, I'm walking the walk here. So apparently you're not. So if you want to go at it, like, let's have a discussion. I can back up what I do.
Yeah. Another important line, Scott, comes toward the beginning when Chris sings, "They ignore the issue and deny the relation between our consumption and brutality." He's highlighting the importance of acknowledging that these animals were killed for human consumption, and that the murder of one living thing should not be of lesser importance than another, I mean, you're a parent. How many times have you had that conversation with your kids about like, well, don't kill that. Even though it's small, like it's a little bug, like, you know, its life is just as meaningful as, you know.
I have that discussion actually all the time. My daughter, who's 11, last year, she decided to become a vegetarian because she couldn't stand the fact that animals were being killed and consumed.
Yeah.
And that's great. It's, you know, I mean, the rest of us, we're eating meat. It is what it is. And she deals. But, you know, we have a lot of conversations. And it's been interesting. I can't not lie and say this album does, you know, ring a little more true in my head, especially when I'm talking to my daughter about some of this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. The song goes right into nailing discards to the wall. Liquid meat is still murder. To be written off by the living grains of a million murdered lives. And I'm not ashamed of my recurring dreams about being a gun and a different species of carnage thrown about the stock. I love how the first two songs are connected with this like spoken part, you know, on my CD. Yeah. They are a bit closer together. On the vinyl, there's a bit of a pause between them, which like always used to throw me off because I've listened to this CD a billion times. And so like when I listen to the vinyl, there's like a longer pause between the two lines. I'm always like, huh? What?
Because well, naturally you just want to go and start singing that line. And yeah.
Oh, I always say it. If I'm driving, I'm sitting there in my car, you know, consider someone else.
Stop consuming animals.
Yeah.
But man, I love how nasty and pissed off the music is on this one.
Oh, I mean, know.
There's no flash. It's just balls to the wall, a minute long song of fury. I have it written down as like the 37 second mark, that mid tempo change up right at the line. You cannot deny that meat is still murder, dairy is still rape. I mean, lyric, you know, content aside there, you know, Jord has some crazy fills right in that section. And it's just, you know, John's got some pretty cool bass licks there, too. It's that whole part of the song is just such a cool transition that leads just to the outro. It's really, I mean, smart.
Yeah.
Again, nobody was doing cool stuff like that.
Well, you know. Even the title, like French philosopher René Descartes, you know, he didn't believe animals had souls. And to test this theory, he nailed his wife's dog to a board and chopped it open while it was still alive.
he was a real sick dude. You just dive into some of the stuff, even just the basic Wikipedia stuff on René there. It's pretty freaky.
It's like, geez Louise.
Yeah.
All right.
Even on my worst day, I read about that guy. I'm like, oh, you know, I'm a pretty good human being.
Yeah, I'm a decent guy.
Yeah. And apparently, and I don't know if you found anything about this too, that line, me and a gun at a different species, supposedly references a Tori Amos song.
Oh, really?
About, yeah. Supposedly about where she was held at knife point and raped. And
eek.
Yeah, I mean, there's some heavy stuff in this song once you start kind of peeling back the onion a bit. It's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it was just one of those songs that's like, wow, like I knew it was heavy. I didn't realize it was this heavy, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, Scott, I'm gonna totally go on an Unscripted Moments, a podcast about propaganda information dump here. Love those guys. Hey, Greg. Hey, Keith. They provide so much information. So here's my attempt to be like those guys. Ready? This song, like the previous one, acknowledges that killing animals for study or for food is murder. Plain and simple, whether you agree or not. Speciesism, or the assumption of human superiority leading to the exploitation of animals, is something many people grapple with. I mean, even from a young age, children are stepping on ants, like we were just talking about, and squashing spiders. You know, I always tell my boys, size does not dictate importance. But that's really hard for a lot of people to come to terms with. I mean, we naturally don't count animal lives as being as important as human lives. And this is evident in our country's meat industry. So here we go. According to meatinstitute.org, U.S. meat production totaled 52 billion pounds in 2017, and U.S. poultry production totaled 48 billion pounds in 2017. According to farmhouseguide.com, the average chicken weighs around 5 pounds or so. That's like 9 billion chickens. That's a fuckload of chickens.
That's insane.
And that's just chickens. The amount of animals killed across the more than 800 slaughterhouses is just staggering. So Chris compares these slaughterhouses as, you know, living graves of a billion murdered lives. And then later, you cannot deny that meat is still murder. When you factor in that a third of the food people buy gets thrown out due to spoiling or not eating at all, giant portions in restaurants or you know, whatever the reason why people are wasting food, you know, who knows? You know, your 11-year-old pushes the plate away. I want to eat that. But it's just mind-blowing to think of the amount of animals that are just being needlessly murdered, you know?
Yep.
So that's not all. According to a 2016 analysis by John Dunham and Associates, the U.S. meat and poultry industry accounts for $1.02 trillion in total economic output, or 5.6% of gross domestic product. So, being a moneymaker, do you suppose there will ever be meaningful legislation on reducing this? Not where there's money to be made, right? Got to make the money.
I think that is a huge point of this whole album is, you know, big money business. Talks and yep. That's it. Yep. And
yeah,
and I think the numbers you just threw around right there, that says it all.
Right. Oh, and according to whitehouse.gov, four large meatpacking companies control 85% of the beef market. Four companies, you know, that's money. Money is just filtering in to these places. But, you know, anyway, how'd I do unscripted moments? So
I'm not unscripted moments, but I'm impressed.
Yeah.
They will be impressed.
Yeah. Chris sings, I have recognized one form of oppression. Now I recognize the rest. And that's to draw our attention to the many different forms of oppression that exist and that you can't really pick and choose which form of oppression you choose to fight against. So that's like the song we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. Callback to the first song.
Again, just talking about how they do that. They do this in a few places on the album too, but it's, you know, I'm not saying there was a concept behind this whole album, but there is sort of like a puzzle, you know, they're putting together with a lot of these themes throughout the whole thing. And you're really apparent in the first two songs.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Let's move on to track three. Less talk, more rock.
I wrote this song 'cause it's fucking boring. To keep spelling out the words that you keep ignoring. It's a macho shit.
Sort of musically is a bit of a fake out about, you know, how they sort of start this. It sounds like this is going to be another heater.
Yeah.
But after like 5 seconds, it ends up being a pretty catchy pop punk tune. My favorite part of this whole song musically is George kick drum fills. If you know what I'm talking about, he's got those really cool. I think he does like four or five in a row, these bass drum triplets. I mean, to this day, every time I hear it, I still think it's so rad.
It is cool. I love the big stops.
Yeah. You know,
it really puts emphasis on the words and the power behind the words he's singing.
Yeah. And then, like, I think it's like a minute and some change in the song. They have, like, this mini bridge in the song. It's kind of how I'm describing it, where Chris has got those, like, little guitar licks.
Yeah.
And the bass just kind of is just hanging back a little bit with the drums. It's just super melodic stuff, like, all over this record.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm going to be a broken record with this thing, too. It's, like, it's just really catchy, poppy, punk stuff.
It is. Yeah. So, fearful of being labeled as another goofy skate punk band, singer-guitarist Chris Hanna described this album as a conscious decision to be more confrontational, noting the presence of the term gay positive on the album cover. The album was expressively political to weed out the jocks and bros. We kind of talked about that in the intro. This song in particular seems to really drive home that message. He sings, I'd like to actively encourage the toughest man to dance as hard as he can to this, my song, and bring your stupidest friends along, you know?
Yep.
He's singing that over the driving rhythms, and that's when it switches to that sort of stop and go section where the band deliver the best line. Love this. We wrote this song because it's fucking boring to keep spelling out the things that you keep ignoring. You know, listen to the lyrics, understand the message. Don't just blindly bop your head and mosh, you know?
And this is where, you know, Chris is trying to make you both really uncomfortable but also trying to get you to stop, listen, and think. And this is where, for me, this is the song that really starts this whole kind of, you know, agenda they have to really push and make the listener uncomfortable in order to educate. And, you know, it's that mentality that you're so uncomfortable that you have almost have no choice to ponder what they're talking about, you know? And again, in this case, Mr. Hanna, he's challenging all the homophobic fans out there by singing about sexual experimentation and, you know, as a very young kid, and then, you know, playing the Are You Too Chicken card to hopefully see if those fans will sing along. And I'm going to go into this line, because if you dance to this, then you drink to me in my sexuality with your hands down my pants by Transitive Property.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's good. There's nothing else that needs to be said. You know exactly what he's trying to do.
Yeah. What's he talking about? Yeah. So good.
And those are the people who are asking that question that he's going after.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely draws people's attention to, you know, people's absurdities, you know, better than anyone else. It's just so good.
smart dude, especially when he gets into these pissed off, like, lyrical, you know, tirades. And but again, it's that whole, you know, stop. Are they really, what are they singing about? Let me think about this for a second, you know? And he's like, you better listen here. This is the whole point of why I put this song together.
Yeah. What did he say? I better listen up. Yeah, definitely. It worked.
Yeah.
The next song is Anchorless. The first of a few songs written and sung by bassist John Samson. Immediately, John's softer voice strikes you, and his writing style is very different. You know, where Chris is more like blunt and in your face, John's tone is a bit more you know, like, ambiguous, you know?
Yeah. I always say there's, during this era, at least with this album, and with How to Clean Everything too, there's like the propaganda coin. There's two sides here. You got the, you know, the very blunt, going for the throat songs, you know, by Chris, and then John, who's got these very melodic rock tunes, lyrics that, you know, have a message, but it's more emotionally heartfelt, thoughtful in nature. But I do think, you know, after he left, you know, Todd brings some of that. It's more of to like a hardcore thrashy kind of musical vibe, but his lyrics somewhat parallel in the way he thinks and structures and what he speaks about in that emotional sort of heartfelt manner. Not all the time, but I mean, sometimes I'm like, well, if John was still in the band and he was going to take, you know, the hardcore route, he might, you know, fit this mold.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's funny too. Every time, like, I listen to this song, and I've been listening to it a lot the past couple of weeks, just kind of getting ready for the podcast, it's like, it's really a very, like, emo melodic song.
Yeah.
It's like bordering almost on like a power, you know, rock. I keep thinking, man, maybe in an alternate universe, if maybe this is a combo of like Jimmy World, Better Than Ezra, and Not a Surf, you know, it's kind of got like all those vibes just mashed into this song.
Yeah. It's definitely like a Weaker Than song. They even played it.
It really
Weaker
is,
Than
yeah.
played the song yeah. when he formed that band. So.
Yeah, there's some cool YouTube videos out there. You can definitely see him doing this with the Weaker Thans.
According to John, in interviews I've read, the song is about a family friend who passed away, a friend they had conflicted feelings about, maybe like a cold person who John never really got to know very well, you know, despite having that person around. John doesn't want to end up like this guy, and so he looks at his surroundings and tries to find ways to not fall into that pattern, to break away and escape the influences of the people or things around you. You know, being anchorless, I guess, is the takeaway of this song.
Yeah, and I guess he has some commentary too in a few interviews I read about, you know, people thinking this may be sort of a depressing tune, but he's like, to me, it's more hopeful about, you know, kind of looking at some of these situations and not bringing that baggage and carrying it throughout life, and, you know, trying to say, okay, this happened, I'm starting fresh, and, you know, I'm putting this all behind me, and it's all good from here.
Yeah. After John's soft-spoken song, Anchorless, we get Rio de San Atlanta, Manitoba. So the upper middle class can sleep. Convince themselves that trick will down. We'll solve this poverty. Murderers walk our streets.
The weapons of their president's policy. I gotta say, Jed, that this is a perfect bedtime lullaby song for children. And I mean, I used to play this for my daughter when she was two, just to lull her to sleep.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, just, it's a really a soothing song. And to this day, every time she has trouble settling down, just put this one on and calm.
Right to sleep.
It's actually the opposite of everything I just said.
I'm going to move into your house. Yeah.
No, this is really a Todd song before Todd was in the band.
Yes, absolutely. It's fast and short and just blasts right by.
39 seconds of a kick in the teeth. That's what it is.
Totally.
And there is like a melodic bit to this around like the 22 second mark. It's what I would call like a chorus right into the outro.
Mm.
And like there's this pretty cool and melodic like harmonized vocal they do over those like brutal guitars and just fast drums. And mm-hmm. like every time I hear that part, I'm like freaking amped every time. It's just awesome. Yeah. Musically, it's just awesome.
I love it. Always turn this one up. Great song. In this one, Chris takes aim at the rich and privileged who blame those less fortunate for all the problems in our cities. Of course, it's their fault. He sings, sweeping ghettos under one big rug makes them easier to contain so the upper middle class can sleep. Systems are put in place to widen this divide instead of close it. He sings, yes, murderers walk our streets and their weapons are their pens, desks, policies, and PR campaigns. Bam. It's like, you know, I just love the way this man writes. I love the way he gets his message across.
This one is black and white, and it's really about that at the end of the day. It's calling out the disparity between the white world and those in the ethnic minority. And, you know, we have the wealthy white elitist, rich people sit at home, blame the poor, the marginalized, those who don't look like them. Basically, that's the root of the problem. And he minces no words and says that, you know, that white world thinks that those in the minority deserve less. And that's just messed up. Screw all you people who subscribe to that bullshit, and because in actuality you're the damn problem.
Right.
That's the song.
And this was the type of music that you would listen to, and then you'd start to look around and you'd notice like, wow, the public park charges a really high admission price. I wonder why they do that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's like those bridges leading to the beach are really low. Is that so buses can't get in? It's like all these like things that like you just don't like people just don't even notice that are surrounding them, all these like, you know,
architected to oppress. I mean, that's how you can definitely look at it, and there's a lot of truth in it.
Mm-hmm. The next song is a public disservice announcement from Shell.
People have the right to the truth, unvarnished, even uncomfortable, but never subjugated to a cause, however noble or well-meaning. They have the right to...
A brief spoken word segment reciting a bit of propaganda from Shell, trying to manipulate public opinion in favor of their practices in the third world.
Yeah, this one, as we were sort of talking before this whole thing started, you know, I kind of live in the marketing world, and diving into this a bit and just reading about, you know, all the papers that have been written about this advertisement from Shell.
Yeah.
And the philosophical, you know, papers that have been, you know, put together to study, you know, this whole practice. It's pretty mind blowing. This is one of those rabbit holes where you could really, you know, go down and just get lost in how messed up what Shell was trying to do at this time period.
Yeah, I know. It's horrific. The band asked Ramsey Kanan of AK Press to read this for the album. AK Press was an underground co-op publication focusing on anarchist material. Members of AK Press toured with Propagandhi on the regular, selling books at their shows. It was important to the band that their message get out there and really try to encourage fans to, you know, purchase the books and gather information, and, you know, as if to say, you know, don't just listen to us, you know, go out and explore this stuff for yourself. You know, we're hopefully making you aware of it, but go out there, get some books, read some things, you know, go on the internet.
It's more to say, like, we're not pulling this out of thin air. There is content that you may not be aware of. Mm-hmm. Here it is. You know, we've opened the door to the library. Now, what you choose to read and take away from, that's up to you. But here it is. We've got it.
Yeah.
So if you want to get some insight, maybe take a turn down a path maybe you never thought about going down, here's an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to be really harsh and crass about it at the same time. But the library is here, by the way.
It's here. All right, Scott. And we thought that nation states were a bad idea.
I'm going to start by talking about something we've talked about a lot in the past, which is the fourth track on Survival of the Fattest.
Mm.
So, which came out March 12th, 1996. So this one song, most of us heard before the album came out.
Yep.
And I think that song in particular was a showstopper on Survival of the Fattest.
Yes.
So it came right after Nick Northern from Snuff, which, super cool tune. Love that Snuff had the Fender Rhodes keyboard on that song. I mean, it just sounds awesome. But Nation States was definitely a hold the phone moment. Yes. Damn, this song is nuts. Kicks ass, my lord. I'm going to listen to this 10 more times before I even proceed to the next song.
Yeah.
I mean, that opening guitar riff, like, hands down, is one of the most iconic openings to any punk song.
Love
I mean,
it.
Period. Like, that guitar riff with the cymbals, the bass drum hits, that dun-dun-dun-dun, that four smacks of the snare with the floor tom. I mean, in 2 seconds of hearing that, you know the song. And that fell right into I'm Just a Kid. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
I know.
And it's just like rapid-fire punk ear carnage, and it never gets old.
Well, perfectly put, my friend. Yes, this is the song that introduced me to the band. It was on Survival the Fattest, and I just was blown away. I loved this song. Actually, the Survival of the Fattest version is the demo.
It is the demo
that they recorded.
It does. It's noticeably different.
Yeah, and that abandoned. So when I actually got Let's Talk More Rock and the thicker, fuller sound, I was just like, oh, you know, like, this is so good, you know.
I think I have one complaint. I'm pretty sure the demo version is maybe like 10 to 15 BPM faster.
Yeah, I think you're right.
It's just a smidge faster, but the album version is slicker for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And come on, that lyrical tongue thrashing that opens the song. I mean, only Chris Hanna.
God.
Every time I try to sing, I can't do it, but it's just awesome.
It's a mouthful. Publicly subsidized, privately profitable.
The anthem of the upper tier, puppeteer untouchable.
Yeah.
Focus a moment, nod in approval, bury our heads back in the barcodes of these neocolonials. I mean, who writes that?
I know.
Chris Hanna. Thank you. Thank you, Chris Hanna. Yep. It's just phenomenal.
But it was so, and of course, at the time, like, I just didn't even think about what the hell he was saying. Like, oh, big words. But yeah, when you dive into it and you start thinking about like the universities and Google and Shell, all these places receiving grants and bailouts and subsidies, you know, while the general populace just kind of looks the other way, like, hey, it's totally fine that these huge companies are doing this. It's like, I'm going to stick my head right here in the sand.
It's the entitled, the puppeteer untouchables. It's, this one is so lyrically smart. It's just... And again, I think for most people, especially, you know, I'm just turned 18, you know, when this came out, like, I'm just thinking, my God, what a ripper. And I'm just trying to even pronounce and get through like the opening lines of this song, just try to just say it, let alone not even digest what he's talking about, just trying to say it.
Yeah.
But like, again, the more you kind of just really think about like how he puts this all together, it's an education in what, 2 minutes? What is this song? 20 seconds, maybe the second longest or third longest song on the album.
Yeah.
And how much he like puts into that short time span. It's really impressive.
Yeah. All that. And he still has time to do some real fancy guitar work. I love the guitar in the song.
Yep.
It's a lot of neat stuff going on. The song is followed by I Was a Preteen McCarthyist.
Judged, strapped to the nose of a USA 10, separated, flesh from bone and home.
Unless you're on board with capitalism, you get called names, like communist. But not being interested in trade and industry, which are controlled by private owners for profit, rather than by the state, doesn't make you a communist. For this song, Chris looks back at his upbringing, growing up in a small Royal Canadian Air Force town. He and his family just went along with what everyone else was thinking. His worldview was influenced by his surroundings. It actually wasn't until he got his hands on a Millions of Dead Cops record that he began to question the surroundings, you know, these things that were going on around him.
Yeah, at its most basic level, what I always took away from this song was, you know, it's the theme of being young, innocent, you know, that elementary education and, you know, not knowing any better, but there is a darker side to being so impressionable.
Mm-hmm.
And how what you learn often varies greatly from the reality you experience, you know, as you become a teenager, as you become a young adult, you get, mm-hmm. you know, you've had this skewed worldview until you get out of the bubble and see how skewered the world really is.
Yeah.
And some people can grow out of their skew worldview and faster than others, and some just stay there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Let's take a look at Resisting Tyrannical Government.
Why don't we all strap bombs to our chests and ride our bikes to the next G7 picnic? Seems easier with every clock tick, but whose will would that represent?
This one starts off with that great line, why don't we all strap bombs to our chests and ride our bikes to the next G7 picnic?
It's been, I actually, like, a big shout out to Samson on this one. You know, while Chris is playing like these uber melodic strum chords, you know, John's got some pretty cool bass work and runs mm-hmm. on this
mm-hmm.
and it's cool. And I love that little riffy solo from Chris. It's just super catchy. I don't know. I find this is one that I'm always humming, you know, especially that ba, 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 you know, that part yeah. is just always, it just gets stuck in your head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, but like, to your point about the G7, that's, yeah, nice shot there, big waste of time, bunch of bullshit, yep.
Yeah. I just love how Chris is, like, so in your face, you know, just like, let's strap bombs to our chest.
mm-hmm.
But it's one of the things I liked about, you know, and continue to like about this band is that bluntness, you know. These guys are all in. There's no, like, throwing stuff out there and then hanging back to see how it's received.
Yeah, you know, It's that finger right to the chest, and it's just tapping.
Yeah.
It's like, this is how we roll. Like, you're either on board and you're going to love what we do, or you're going to be that guy standing there like, what the hell is really going on here? Who the hell are these people? But that's not who we're talking to anyways. If anything sinks in, then our job is done. But, you know, we have a message, and our true fans, they get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, one of the things that some people that I know that don't really like this band, they say, well, you know, these guys think that they're 100% right, and anyone who disagrees with them is 100% wrong. And, you know, I don't think that's true. You know, the band engage in a lot of self-deprecating humor, and, you know, while they're, you know, they're taking some pretty bold stances and provoke people, I think they do it to get people to think, you know. You have to shake mm-hmm. people up and get them to really open their eyes. You can't.
And I say this all the time. That's, like, I think their number one goal at the end of the day is, like, they
you can't
want
do it half-heartedly.
You to think.
Mm-hmm.
And they always, you know, go back to that line, you know, you call me on my shit, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, my door's open, you know. We've put it out there. If we're going to put it out there, we're happy to engage.
Yeah. I'm going to do this for my buddy Craig. Lots of hockey references in this one.
Yes. Steve Smith. Are you familiar with Steve Smith? If you're not yet, I'm pretty sure you are now. So,
yeah. Steve Smith of the Revolution. Smith was a player for the Oilers who scored a goal on his own net, knocking the Oilers.
But wasn't credited with the goal. It was somebody, a bench player or somebody who was on the bench at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some good articles about it, but yeah. But Gretzky, you know, at the time, who was, you know, he kind of came to Steve Smith's defense and was like, you know, it's a total bunch of bullshit. He's not to blame for the loss. It's, mm-hmm. you know, we should have clinched the series way before that, you know, that game even happened. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like the Bill Buckner thing. You know, everyone's like blaming Bill Buckner, but it's like, yeah, the ball went through his legs, but that wasn't why, you know.
Exactly. So there we have that moment, you know, in this situation. But, you know, God bless Chris with the hockey analogies again. It's
sports.
Cool
sports.
How he's able to do this, you know, in a handful of songs.
I love Jesus Saves, Gretzky scores.
Oh my God. If you're not a fan, like every time, that's like one of those like lines that always comes up. It's
a classic. Yeah.
And I don't and whether people understand it or not, it's just so fun to say.
And I'm such a nerd. There's a church near where I live and I pass it all the time and it's got a big thing out front, Jesus Saves. And every time I drive past it, Gretzky scores.
Well, I think you just got to let me know where that is. Like, I'll get a banner printed and just stick it right there.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's funny though. There's one line in this song that is that always bothers me, and it's probably because I was kind of a techie geek back in the day, still am. But it's that, why don't we plant a mechanic virus? And I'm like, it's a digital virus, not mechanic, Chris.
Hey,
come on, you're so smart,
man.
You're so smart. Computer virus would have worked.
Yeah.
I figured I'd nitpick something.
Mechanical. Maybe you needed a four syllable word.
Maybe. Digital, mechanical. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just had to throw that out there for the hell of
yeah.
it.
Yeah. You got to nitpick a little bit.
Yeah.
I think the best line, it might even be the best line of the album, is where he says, "And yes, I recognize the irony that the very system I oppose affords me the luxury of biting the hand that feeds, but that's exactly why privileged fucks like me should feel obliged to whine and kick and scream until everyone has everything they need." I just think that is like, it underscores the whole record.
Yep. But it's also, again, this is Chris. And this, everybody who wants to take a shot at him, he's also saying, look, I'm in this system. Like, I get it, But this is why I have my strong opinions. I see what's going on. And as much as I'm in it, I'm trying to get out of it and make a difference.
Right.
So I think that's where I draw my line, is that some people live on one side of this line where they do nothing, and there's other people like me who are like, yeah, I'm crossing it and I'm going to say something. I'm going to try to do something. So
right. Using those opportunities.
I speak those words, but there's action behind those words.
Yeah. Or else they'd just be playing their hometown bar and nobody would be hearing these messages.
Exactly.
They got to sign to a label. They got to send a fat. They got to get out there.
But look, they'd be saving on gas. So there we go. There's an upside.
Let's take a look at GIFs. John is back again. Stark difference in tone and direction is very apparent. It's so, these songs come on, I'm always like, a little John breather,
Yeah, another short and sweet 2-minute tune. Again, I'm repeating myself. I'm a broken record on Talking Records, but musically, another super catchy pop-punk song. John, I love John. I mean, he's got these really soothing vocals.
Mm-hmm.
And, musically, my favorite part is the outro of this, where it's just John with that bouncy bass riff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then they all come in and they're like just chugging together. It's cool. And then, there's that short melodic riffy solo from Chris. George's got some cool little off-time fills in there. And then, boom, the song's done. That's it.
Yeah. It kind of just passes you by sometimes. I remember this being a song for the longest time. I could never remember how it went. I knew all the other songs. I could, hum them. And I'd get to GIFs and I'd be like, "What? How does this one go again?"
But it comes back. It's like you get into it just for like a few seconds. It's like, oh God, yeah, this is.
Yeah, well, then you hear it and you're like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, this another good, catchy tune by Propagandhi, courtesy of Mr. Samson there.
Yeah.
I always love the line that, but I'm as clueless as a drooling four-year-old. And
yeah.
Basically, that's how I just tend to operate anyway. So I just really resonates with me. But yeah, love that.
It's a great line. Let's move on to "The Only Good Fascist Is a Very Dead Fascist."
Swastikas and Klan robes. Sexist, racist, homophobes. Aryan nations and hammer skins.
True story. So I asked my future wife at the time, I was like, "Hey, honey, wouldn't this be a good introduction song at our wedding?" Because there's always the introductions like, "And here are the parents of the bride, Eugene and Constance." And they come out to like Cool in the Gang, celebration, And I was like, just as I put this on, I was like, this is what we should come out to. Isn't this great? Talk about memorable.
Oh my God.
I got shot down, but yeah, awesome.
That would make a good YouTube video. You know how they always have like the dancing grooms, like, you know, the 20 groomsmen are like suddenly dancing on the dance floor. Here's a wedding video of this couple coming out to The Only Good Fascist.
Yep. I want to alienate everybody on your side of the family immediately, right away from the get-go. So here we go.
This one just slams. I mean, nowadays the band tend to be very technical, but man, with these simple power chords and the in-your-face lyrics and stuff, this one is just always so fun to listen to.
It's great. It's just great. This is one of those, like, yeah, like, if you want, you know, I mean, there's a lot of songs that sum up propaganda, but like, just the uniqueness of the band, like, this is one of those songs.
Absolutely. The Winnipeg scene in which propaganda emerged was dominated by skinheads. In fact, the band often cite this atmosphere as one of the main reasons they started the band, to defy those people. This song is a direct message to racists, homophobes, white power groups. He asks, what exactly are the great historical accomplishments of your race that make you proud to be white? And I love how in the list of things like slavery, genocide, and war, he throws in like Thighmaster and sitcoms.
I mean, I kind of felt bad for Alf. Like, what the hell did Alf do?
I know.
Seriously, come on. Yeah. But to his point, like, there's always like this grain of just nonsense humor that you can tease out of like even the most insane subject matter that is so like brutally like, oh, this is tough to listen to. And then here we go. We got a few lines in there. And I absolutely love that long-lasting sentiment at the end. Kill them all and let a Norse god sort them out.
Yeah.
That's like, again, Thor, come on. What the hell has he done? I mean, seriously. Well, Thor, you know, hope you're ready to do your job at the gates of Valhalla.
Yeah.
Sort them all out. So there we go.
Well, according to Kristen Weiss, which I was reading this interview, and he was like, we're trying to figure out, like, you know, trying to work out how to end the song. And I asked everyone if they thought kill them all and let a Norse god sort them out would be funny. And everyone burst out laughing. And I thought, okay, we're done. This is the song.
Yep. If you're going to put a exclamation point at the end, I mean, that I couldn't agree more. That's the way to do it.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah, this song just rips. It's just a good punk song.
Yeah.
Doesn't let up until the very end. You know, it's got that little breakdown-ish outro. You know, Chris's vocals, I think, are super strong in this one. Mm-hmm. I think John's backing vocals perfectly accent his lead vocals, especially in the bridge section where they're singing together. This song is just great, you know.
Yeah.
Really is.
I love that. If our schools won't teach us, we'll have to teach ourselves to analyze and understand the systems of thought control and share it with each other. Great line. It's just, you know, it's a song about the illusion that people are properly represented by their government. Like,
and
we're kidding ourselves if we honestly think that the politicians are looking out for us.
Oh, absolutely. Doing
what's in our best interest, you know?
And I think, you know, we talked about how sometimes they use songs back to back to kind of set up a whole theme. I think this is sort of setting up the next song a little bit too. So
definitely.
Yeah. You know, talking about, you know, the election process, just because we live in a democracy doesn't mean that people end up being fairly represented by those in office.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that whole theme carries over into the next song.
Right. Yeah. Before we get to that, that line where he's like, you can vote however the fuck you want, but power still calls all the shots.
Just, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm probably going to butcher. There's this like old saying that, you know, just because you have options to choose from doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to pick the winner.
Right.
And I think that's the theme of this one.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take a look at the state lottery. Is this what we deserve? Struggle palace wars. To fight amongst ourselves. This one begins with the Noam Chomsky speech. Chomsky is the author of more than 150 books on topics such as linguistics, war, politics, and mass media. Author Robert E. Babe points out that Chomsky is one of the most cited scholars alive.
Yeah, and I think the clip they use is actually Chris Hedges, who's a New York Times correspondent, kind of rehashing and what Chomsky was saying.
Mm-hmm.
But don't know how that really affects anything there. It's still Chomsky's words, but I just found it was interesting that they found this clip here. But in terms of music, I mean, this is just when once it kicks, it's like this fast, brutal, dark tone. I love that the music is building underneath the spoken word.
Yeah.
And then boom,
like rising up.
Yep. And then boom, we're into it. I mean, it's a simple song overall. I mean, straightforward chord changes, but just musically, this one flows perfect. It's just a really good ripping tune.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I love that part right where Chris says, you know, might just survive and going into, well, I wouldn't call it like a harmonic. It's more of like a guitar whine.
Mm.
And it's just George hits this crash. You get this super energetic, like pissed off bridge part. Mm. I don't know. To me, this is one of my favorite songs on the album. And I actually skipped over this like the first time. I was just in this energetic mode, all these songs. And then I was like, oh, another spoken word. What do we got here?
Yeah.
And then I came back to this like after I hit the last song. And I was like, oh, God, like this is one of those songs I played over and over again for maybe about 10 times before I started shuffling around the album again.
Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah, once you get through that speech, I mean, yeah, it does kind of like, I mean, it's not long, but it does kind of slow the momentum down a little bit.
Yeah.
This is a song about, you know, these victory parades and celebrations that like, you know, like presidents participate in. You know, when they win elections, they're on TV and they're standing there with all the confetti coming down and it's like this big celebration. It's like they're acting like they won something, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
It's like, but what have you won? Like, what?
I mean, who the hell wants to be president? Governor, senator? I mean, you can't pay me enough like to that job. So from the point of like, yeah, what did you really win here? I mean, and that's the narrative song, winning the elections, being on top of the world, and then really dealing with the nonstop stream of fix that, fix this.
Yeah.
People are dying. People are hungry.
Right.
There are wars. You know, how does this not scare the piss out of you? You know, like, do you understand what you're really getting into? It's not a pageant. It's
yeah, yeah.
There's more to this. And are you really ready for the more?
Chris sings, does it seem strange to you? The confetti, the balloons, the mile wide grins and the victory dance to welcome in the air to a state of disrepair. Because it sure seems strange to me. They're acting like they won the fucking lottery.
Period.
And then he points out how world leaders inherit like incredibly difficult situations to work through. It seems to suggest that rather than throwing balls and parades and dances and like concerts, that these leaders should be getting down to work, you know, accept the job and get to it, you know. But they don't. Chris points out that many of these leaders are sort of, you know, motivated more by self-interest. Like, look, I won. You know, it's like...
Greed at the end of the day.
Yeah. 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 Refusing to be a man.
Yeah, something about this song, how it starts off, I don't know. It always struck me as it's got like an arena rock vibe.
Yeah,
just musically. It's just something about some of the chords he plays. Just like, yeah, I could see this. You know, some 80s hair metal band doing something like this. But yeah, I always thought this was a bit of an odd song to end the album with, just solely from a musical vibe.
Mm.
It's just the tempo and everything. But it's, I don't know, there's something in the lyrical content that also sort of just kind of ties things together. It's again, another one of those, you know, uncomfortable songs where he's working through, you know, his own sexuality.
Yeah.
And, you know, how he needs to look at his own gender and how, you know, the male gender affects, you know, feminism and so forth. And I feel like he's really working through his own issues. And
yeah,
this is a song to do that.
Yeah, he definitely has a podcast episode devoted to this song, which is really fascinating. I don't want to take anything away from that because I want people to go listen to that podcast, you know, so I don't have a lot of notes on this one other than, yeah, this is a song that's kind of slower. I do often wish that the record would end with a bang.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess this song actually did start off as a faster song, and they wanted to kind of experiment with...
Yeah, this, supposedly this was like a drop D tune, faster
song. It's the first
song.
Drop D song they ever did, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it was... Yeah, I don't recall if it was in that podcast they talked about why they switched it up.
Mm-hmm.
Was that... again, if it's in there, go listen to it, because it's good. But
just to play with the tempos and stuff, I guess, maybe. Yeah. I don't know, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the song is partially inspired by the book "Refusing to Be a Man" by John Stoltenberg,
which like I think said, he got this from John.
Oh, okay.
I believe. Yep.
And yeah, like you said, it's just a look at feminism and exploring his own past, and you know the expectations our culture has placed on gender and gender roles and all that. So, you know, like I said, good song.
It's a great song. It's a good rock song. That's what it is. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's take a quick look at this artwork, because it is definitely, like we said earlier, it's definitely fascinating. The album cover is the promotional poster of the 1984 Calgary Stampede.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what you found on this, because I didn't find a whole lot. I always thought this was very interesting, considering the choice of verbiage that is around the artwork.
Yeah.
But, you know, I knew this, you know, the Calgary Stampede, held in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, annually since 1923. I've got, you know, some basic backstory on that. But aside from them deciding on the artwork, I was curious to see what Jed's investigative reporting found.
Not much, you know, I mean, they just...
So it wasn't me then, no. There wasn't a whole lot out there.
Yeah, no. The title, I found that the title is a tongue-in-cheek reference to a criticism of some of the band's shows, where the explanation of what a song was about ran longer than the song itself. You know, less talk, more rock. These guys probably did a lot of talking at their shows. I'm sure they heard their fair share of someone in the crowd yelling, "Hey, let's, you know, let's go. Where's the music? You know, like, let's get some music here."
And just in part from like a visual interpretation, like I think we've said this a bunch about this album is really just kind of like a kick in the nuts, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, just looking at this, I mean, what type of kick in the nuts could be worse than what we're seeing right here?
Mm-hmm.
And again, the themes about how, what we do, you know, to the animal world. This may be a little bit of a revenge theme imagery here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely showing that cruelty and
what goes around comes around. Here's an example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the LP insert has like a lot of these really well written essays about veganism mm-hmm. and capitalism, and you know. Things like that. On the flip side of that, along with the lyrics, were lists of resources where one could go to further research progressive ideas. I always thought that was kind of cool. I would look into some of that stuff when I was young. First got the internet. It was fun to explore those things.
Good old interweb there. Yeah. I think, well, somebody was saying it's propaganda. He had just placed the perfect roadmap into the listener's hands for everything they're talking about on this album. Mm-hmm. It's all in the insert.
Yeah.
So should they be brave enough to explore?
Right. And I guess we should probably note that the early copies of this did not come with a UPC code on the sleeve. My vinyl has one. But as you can see, I don't know if you can see that, it's like kind of half tucked underneath the...
Yep. Yep.
Chris said, at the time, it was seen as a certain level of commitment to commerce. They were emblematic of commercial aspirations. Fat Mike objected to keeping the UPC off, but he respected the band's wishes. Chris later jokes that maybe it was a mistake to do that, as it made getting the record sold maybe a little bit more difficult
but
to track.
But at the time, it just goes along that line of, you know, them walking the walk again. You know, we talk about capitalistic mentality and how we're against the themes there. And so, look, you know, we're not out to make a buck here and to kind of make it harder on ourselves. We're getting rid of that.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll say about the album artwork or the album liner notes and stuff is Chris is listed as Pete on this record. And so going back to what I said earlier about thinking that they had a new singer, I remember looking at the booklet and being like, yeah, there's this different guy. There's a different guy. Who's this Pete guy?
I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
Just great.
Pete.
I appreciate that sort of dry sense of humor there. It's like, who cares anyways? And that's kind of like, it really is kind of that mentality. It's like, you know, oh, who cares about some of this other crap here? It's just, it's an album cover. It's an insert. It's whatever. Right. It's like, we got a message. Listen to the music. That's where it all is at the end of the day. So it doesn't matter who the hell is singing it. Like, just listen.
That's the focus. Yeah, definitely. Well, in closing, Scott, this is a record that I've loved for a very long time. Whether it's the clangy bass, the important message in the lyrics, just the ripping songs on here. I mean, I've had this record with me a long time. And, you know, I really do try to think about where, you know, how did I get into these records? I do remember it was a friend who just had turned me on to this kind of music and this kind of message. And, you know, being kind of a dopey guy and not really thinking about my surroundings, this is one of the earliest times in my life where I kind of was like, yeah, I should really start to think about these things. Like, I just didn't pay attention to elections and stuff like that. And I started to, and, you know, maybe I shouldn't have, because then from that point on, I just became an angry man. But but anyway, great record.
That's why we play the music we do.
And that's why we make punk rock. Yeah.
That's why we make punk rock music.
Yeah. So anyway, great record. And I've been so excited to talk with you about this record today. Do you have any closing thoughts on this album, Scott?
Honestly, it's to your point. This was one of those game changers for me as well. I mean, anything they've ever put out has always been a game changer. You know how much I love this band. There's just not a bad album. Like, they really just don't have a bad album.
No.
They're all unique. They're all thought-provoking. I mean, even, and I'm going to say this to their chagrin, I mean, how to clean everything too. I mean, it really is. It's so impactful for so many people. I think anybody who grew up in that era, you know, this is a band that means something and still does.
Yeah.
And you can put on any of those albums anytime and you just like, thank God for Propagandhi. They're just so influential to all of us from this era. And we're always going to be spinning this album and every other album they have.
Absolutely. Those opening guitar lines to Nation States, man, it'll be imprinted on my brain forever.
Yep, as it should. That's a barcode of honor right there. Yeah. So on the brain. So
Scott, I'd like to thank you for hanging out tonight. This has been a lot of fun talking about this record with you. I always love having you on.
Always a blast, man. I know this was a challenge to try to get done. I'm just glad we finally were able to do it. Always great talking to Gandhi with you. And I'm sure we'll be talking more in the future.
That's right. We got more albums to cover.
No shortage.
I would like to take a quick minute to thank all the various places on the internet where I found interviews and Vice and all these magazines. Exclaim. Chris Hanna's wonderful podcast. Check it out. It is just wonderful. And I would like to thank Krista Makes for the theme music. I would like to thank all of you, the listeners, people who are interested in this stuff, people who enjoy listening to friends talk about music. Thank you. It really means a lot to us that you're tuning in, you're hanging out with us every episode or choice episodes of bands you like or intermittently. But thank you. It does mean a lot to us. Check us out on the socials, Instagram, Facebook. Interact with us, talk records with us, tell us about how you got into Propagandhi. All right. Scott, until next time, man, be well.
Take care, everybody. Thank you, Jed.
All right.